Well, hello again. Good afternoon from New York City, and thank you all for joining us in today's webinar to talk about the Fulbright US Scholar Program and to highlight opportunities in the United Kingdom. So I'm going to just start our presentation, and I hope everyone is doing well. And just introduce myself. My name is Aphrodita Krasnici. I'm the Outreach and Recruitment Officer. I work on the Fulbright US Scholar Program for Europe and Eurasia. And today, we're going to highlight opportunities in the United Kingdom. And I'm joined here today by my colleague at the US-UK Fulbright Commission, Rebecca Thurston. Rebecca, welcome.
Hi. Hi, everyone.
Thank you for joining us directly from the UK. We really appreciate it. And also, we have the honor to have with us an alum of the Fulbright US Scholar Program to the UK, Ms. Pamela Harris-Lawton. Hi, Pamela.
Hi, everyone.
Thank you for joining us. And Pamela was a recent Fulbright US Scholar to the UK in the academic year 2018-2019. So this is great that we have our panelists join us, and they can share also their experience and involvement with the Fulbright US Scholar Program. Just quickly to remind everyone that we're going to do the presentation, we're going to highlight these opportunities in the UK, and we will take questions at the end. So if you have any questions, make sure you chat them in the chat box. We'll try to respond to all these questions during our presentation, of course, but feel free to write to us in the chat box and we'll get to those questions later on. So before we continue highlighting the opportunities in the Fulbright US Scholar Program in the UK, I would just like to give a brief overview of the Fulbright mission. It is a program that works in partnership with 160 countries worldwide. So it offers opportunities for academics, administrators, independent professionals to do teaching, to do research, or even study abroad. And the Fulbright mission is to foster mutual understanding between nations, between the U.S. and other nations abroad. So think about this, how you could serve as a cultural ambassador of the United States abroad as you start crafting your application. Think about the amazing history that the Fulbright program has. It was established in 1946 by Congress. It is one of the flagship international educational cultural exchange programs. It is funded by U.S. State Department, and here in the U.S., it is administered by the Institute of International Education, the organization that I work for, whereas overseas, and especially now with the U.K., it is administered by the Fulbright Commission in the U.K. So they are our important partner in the Fulbright program. Fulbright program always tries to include diverse applicants in the pool, so is always trying to make sure that the participants that are selected for Fulbright program represent a diverse population of the United States. So a Fulbright program does not discriminate, and it always welcome applications from regardless of the race, color, national origin, etc. So just keep this in mind, especially if you come from an underrepresented institution that does not send many Fulbright scholars abroad. Think about that as you could also well represent your institution. And just to see how large the Fulbright program is, we do send about 8,000 participants annually, both ways, because this is an exchange program. But for today's program, the Fulbright US Scholar Program sends about 800 participants a year. And then we do have these very important programs like the Fulbright US Student Program. If you know of great students and qualified students who are interested to serve as cultural ambassadors, maybe study or do research abroad, you can definitely recommend them for the Fulbright US Student Program, as the program just launched for the 21-22 cycle. Then we also host foreign students. We host visiting scholars who come from across the globe here in the United States. We do have this also amazing program, the Foreign Language Teaching Assistant Program. And just to see how large the program has become since 1946, Fulbright program has sent approximately 390,000 participants. So this is a great network to be part of. Moving further to get an idea of the distribution of these awards, of these grants. So this is the data we have from 2018-2019. And just to see, like, majority of participants selected a combination of teaching and research. And then research is the second, teaching is 17%, and we do even have opportunities in postdoc and also for administrators. So this is just like it can change from year to year, but this is more recent data that we have collected. What is most important to keep in mind is the eligibility for becoming a Fulbrighter. First of all, the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program requires for you to be a U.S. citizen. And then degree and experience as required by the award. You keep in mind that UK offers so many diverse opportunities, and majority of them would require a PhD or terminal degree, and then some other requirements. It is important that we do have opportunities for professionals and artists as well. And then teaching experience varies from award to institution, so make sure you also follow the requirements from each institution and each award. If we have any alumni in the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program who have recently been on a program, just keep in mind that they have to wait 2 years before they are eligible for another Fulbright. How do you pick a Fulbright that works for you? Basically, you want to look for the profile of these awards, whether they're looking for postdoc applicants or early and mid-career distinguished chairs or even like emeritus adjunct or independent scholar. So there are like the all these opportunities for Fulbrighters. You just have to find the right fit for you. Keep in mind that we do offer the flex option, and they're available in 63 countries and all the world areas. They allow multiple visits over the span of 2 years. We do have even regional research awards, and we do have some particularly in Europe, like the Schumann Awards and some other multi-country awards. As probably you know, that you can apply to only one award per application cycle. And but these are the some of the exceptions that we have. The regional awards, the multi-country awards, allow you to apply to two or three different countries within the same region. And how do you select the right award? You want to look for the what kind of expertise they're looking for, experience, and also how does this fit to the proposal that you want to do on the project, the teaching or research. If you have regional experience, that could help you maybe better to become a better cultural ambassador. And for UK, the language is not a challenge, obviously, because it's English, but definitely you want to look for the disciplines represented in these partnership awards in the UK. And then why did you choose this country? Why UK? And how would the communities benefit from your project, from your teaching or research? And pay close attention to the career level that they are looking for. So now I just would like to highlight some of the frequently asked questions that we have for opportunities in the UK. One of the most common questions we receive is my discipline represented, basically. So you want to look for these universities and partnership awards that UK offers and see if the discipline is well represented within those awards. We do have like some arts disciplines in the arts. We do have disciplines in STEM, etc. So make sure if your discipline is well highlighted in the award, then it gives you better chance. And are there opportunities for early career scholars? What if I don't have any contact at the host institution? So many of the awards require the letter of invitation. They require for you to establish these these contacts, so you want to reach out to them. It's usually like a cold calling, and you would establish these contacts because they would then get back to you with a response whether this project would work with them or not. And how do I get a letter of invitation after you establish like a couple of connections or you send a couple of emails? I'm sure that somebody would get back to you with a response. And then the program is funded through U.S. government, through Department of State, and here in partnership with the Fulbright Commission and in partnership with some of the institutions. So there are some benefits for family members depending on the award, depending on the partnership award. So just these are just some of the few questions we receive. And again, you can always reach out to us. We do have the email address, europeeurasia@iie.org, and we'll make sure to get back to you as soon as possible. So now I would like to give the floor to Rebecca Thurston, who is the program manager within Fulbright U.S. UK Commission, and she can tell us more about these opportunities in the UK and what they're looking for in particular as part of the Fulbright U.S. Scholar Program. Rebecca?
Great. Thank you so much, Epidita. And hi, everyone. It's really nice to be speaking to you all from London this evening, my time. So as you can see on this slide, we have a selection of some of the awards that we have on offer at the UK, the US UK Fulbright Commission. As you can see, one thing to draw attention to about the UK awards is that the vast majority of our awards are partner awards, which means they are each of these is held with one of our partner universities. There's a couple of exceptions to this, which I'll describe. But as you can see from some of these that have been pulled out of the 29 awards that are currently available this academic year, we have awards in each of the four countries of the UK, so England, Scotland, Wales, and Northern Ireland. We have a real range of institutions, from ancient universities to very contemporary modern universities. And we also have a range of awards from discipline-specific awards, as Afrodita was talking about, to all disciplines awards. So here you can see that, for example, the University of York has both a History of Art specific award and an All Disciplines award, to which you could apply from all kinds of different areas. At Queen's University Belfast, we offer specific, really interesting awards in both Irish literature and then a separate award in creative writing, both of which have a great teaching component and then also a visiting professorship. We have awards focused on things like art and design, but also STEM, nursing. One interesting one perhaps to draw your attention to here, the Fulbright Cyber Security Award, are interesting in that these can be taken up at any institution in the UK. So whereas the rest of our awards show the specific home, so for example, University of Sheffield or Loughborough University, the Cybersecurity Award, these can be taken up at the best institution to fit your project. And cybersecurity is a partnership between the US and UK government in that quite exciting area. So I'll go on to the next slide just to look at five examples in a bit more detail. But again, for more information about the 29 awards that are on offer this academic year, as Afrodita will describe, you can look at the IAE catalogue for more information. But I thought I would just talk about a handful of awards, again, just to give you a sense of what's on offer in the UK. So the first one to mention was the Fulbright Scotland Visiting Professorship at the Glasgow School of Arts. Again, it's a really nice opportunity to do a really, again, a quite focused discipline-specific award. But when you go into what's on offer at the Glasgow School of Art, they have a range of really interesting specialties, from advanced textiles to environmental architecture to they have a really exciting urban lab, Institute for Design Innovation, and of course, fine art design. There's the Macintosh School of Architecture there. This is an institution that was founded in the 19th century but is incredibly modern, and this is a great opportunity for an area which often there aren't these really specific awards. So Arts and Design at Glasgow is an award which we're obviously very, very happy to be able to support. Another distinguished chair, again in this case in the humanities at the University of Manchester. Manchester obviously a very big city in the north of England with again a historic university that again has this strong research and teaching culture. And this distinguished chair in the humanities is a very good opportunity to contribute to the public life of this university through seminars, public lectures, and any discipline within the Faculty of Humanities. And we've had scholars from a whole range take up this distinguished chair. By contrast to the arts and humanities heavy focus I've had so far at Lancaster University, we have a STEM focused award. Lancaster is a slightly smaller city in the northwest of England, very close to the Lake District, so I know a lot of our scholars there tend to take up the opportunity to go hiking. But again, this STEM-focused award really takes advantage of the focuses that Lancaster has on quantum technology, security, data science, energy. They have these great collaborations between academia, national laboratories, and industry. And again, things like the Center for Research and Evidence of Security Threats. It's a really interesting, fantastically productive research university in the northwest of England that offers this opportunity in STEM, science, and technology. As a little break from those discipline-specific opportunities, I thought I would mention Cardiff University, or Prifysgol Cardiff, to reflect the fact this is a Welsh university in the capital of Wales. So Cardiff University, again, a fantastic all-disciplines opportunity to take advantage of this will be a 4 to 6 months research project in any of their research active departments. And we've had people from a whole range of disciplines come to Cardiff, which again, a really beautiful, livable, interesting city in Wales, which I know that a lot of our US scholars who spend time in Wales really enjoy the opportunity to get to know a part of the UK like that. And then finally, I just wanted to mention the University of Birmingham Distinguished Chair Award. We also have a Scholar Award as well as the Distinguished Chair at the University of Birmingham. Birmingham being a big metropolitan city in the Midlands of the UK with, again, a very historic and research-active university which has a huge range of specialisms from education and law to a very famous Shakespeare Institute. To be the Distinguished Chair is a real opportunity to be sort of centered in the intellectual life of the university. All chairs become honorary fellows of the university's Institute of Advanced Studies and are particularly encouraged to take part in interdisciplinary research across the university. And so as well as that distinguished chair opportunity, there is a all-disciplined scholar award as well. And this seems like a good moment to echo what Aphrodita said about making sure that you look out for the range of opportunities to suit every stage of your career, as well as these visiting professorships and distinguished chair awards. There is a huge range of disciplines and discipline-specific awards that are available to scholars at all stages of their career, including early career scholars. So make sure you pay attention to those opportunities because we're so keen to support people at all stages of their career. That's a bit of a rattle through some of the many awards we have on offer, but I'm going to come back at the end and talk to answer any of the specific questions you have, both about how things work from the UK side, but also our university partners and our specific awards. So I'd be very happy to answer any questions then.
Thank you so much, Rebecca, for giving us an overview of these wonderful opportunities. And again, like you mentioned, there are more opportunities in the UK. We just decided to highlight few of the awards, but there are it's a range of opportunities in the UK. And then I'm going to show you the catalog of awards in a minute just so that you can see like all these great opportunities. And now I would like to give the floor to our alumni, Pamela Lawton, who was a recent Fulbright US Scholar to the UK, so she can share her experience and give us some tips on how to put together a successful application. Thank you, Pamela.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. So I'm towards the end of my career, and I had always wanted to do a Fulbright, and finally just said, you know, I'm just going to apply. I'm going to do this. And so I am in the unique position of being an educator of art teachers, helping people become art teachers, and being an artist. So I was looking for a program where I could make art with a community of learners and write research about it. So I was looking for a community where I could be involved with a school of education or a department of education and also connect with the art school or an art department. And I think part of what I would say as a tip is if you kind of know where you might want to be in the UK, to begin first by really taking a really long look at that university's website, because there's so much information you can call from that. So I was at the University of Edinburgh, and it was a Scotland visiting professorship, which I believe is the equivalent of a distinguished chair. And so I didn't really realize that at the time to kind of know that. So when I looked at the University of Edinburgh, because I was always interested in traveling to Edinburgh, such a very culturally rich and literary city, I looked to see what the department that the award was open to. And it was open to the College of Arts and Humanities, and the School of Education fell under that. So as I kind of went through the website, I wanted to find out, well, who's the head of school for education? And I looked at that part of the website, and I didn't see anything about art education specifically. It was education and physical education. And so I reached out to the head of school, which would be like the dean here in the United States. And she was very welcoming. So I was fortunate in the person that I happened to reach out to. And I talked to her about how I wanted my project that I was thinking about to be a cross-section with working with education students and people who were interested in art making in the community. And so that's how I got started, was finding someone who then became person to write my invitation letter. So I would say start with the person who might be the head, the chair, the head of school for whichever college or program that you're interested in working with. So I was able to craft a specific experience for myself where I was working with education students, and then they also connected me to the art college there, which wasn't part of the award, but they were very helpful in what I was doing. So I would say that was a first tip. The second thing was I found the samples on the Fulbright website for how to craft your document. I think it's only 6 pages. Very helpful. So I looked at several examples, and as I was writing mine, I kept a lot of that in mind, and that really helped me a lot. I also thought about I think something that I didn't think about until I got there, which is something I would recommend that people think about, is if you're not going with a family member, if you're going alone, or even if you are going with a family member, what sorts of collegial opportunities are there outside of the time that you're spending on your research and teaching? Because I think for a lot of people, even though there's a lot to explore in the places where you'll be, it's also great if you meet colleagues that you can have some sort of social life with. I think that that adds a great deal to your experience. So the way they worked it at the University of Edinburgh was it was connected to the Institute for Advanced Studies in the Humanities. So there were scholars coming from all over the world into this Humanities Institute. And that's where my office was. And so every week we had lunches together, and we had a talk. So everyone gave a talk about what their research was about. And that gave me a base of folk to connect with and do social things with, which I thought was really amazing. So rather than, you know, think solely about the program or the department that you want to work in or teach in or do research in, think also about how you might want to spend your social time there. Because often the colleagues that you might be working with obviously have their own lives and may not have a social mechanism in place for somebody who's coming from, you know, another country. So think about those things. The other thing that I thought about that I did do that I think was pretty smart was I worked out where I was going to be living long before I got there. So they sent me some websites that I could use to find housing. And one of them is Sabbatical Homes. So I would suggest looking at that really early if you think you want to do this and you know where you want to be. Because getting the right place is important. You know, you don't want to be stressed out not knowing where you're going to live and trying to get all your visa documents and all that stuff straight while not knowing where you're going to be. So I know a couple of the people who came through with me kind of did that after they got there. But for me personally, I was happy that I reached out and got the place where my husband and I were going to stay before we actually set foot in the UK. My husband did accompany me, which was great. They offered him the same sort of visa that I had, so that if he wanted to work, he could have, and that was very helpful. I will say, you know, we registered for the NHS right away, and we did wind up having to go a couple of times, nothing serious, but it was a comfort knowing that that benefit was there. And I spent some time ahead because I knew I wanted to work with a community outside of the students in the school. I wanted to work with young people, immigrant youth particularly, in the Edinburgh area, that I reached out with my contact there at the university to ask what communities they already had a relationship with that might welcome me. So that was really helpful. So I laid a lot of the groundwork for my project before I went. I guess the last thing I would say is, even though my award was a teaching and research award, teaching is very different there than it is in the United States. And so basically, it was really more about my research, and then I was asked to give some talks, which was fine. So I was not teaching a class in the typical sense that we do here in the in U.S. higher education institutions. So I found that to be fascinating. So I was able to devote a lot of the time to the research project I was doing. The other thing that I did is, coming from a large research university here in the States, I went ahead and started the work for my institutional review board for my project prior to leaving. So I had all of the acceptances for my research from my institution. And then when I contacted the University of Edinburgh to find out if I had to do another, like a parallel IRB, they said, no, basically what you've got from your institution is fine with us. So those are all things that you'd want to figure out ahead of time, if what you're doing requires an IRB from your institution in the United States. So I would say some pluses that I took advantage of while I was there was during the spring break, which was a two-week period. My husband and I did a Eurail trip all around Europe. We went to like 7 countries in 15 days, which was crazy but amazing at the same time. Other things that you should think about is what conferences related to your profession that you'd like to attend that are taking place in Europe while you're there, because a lot of times you have to apply to present at these conferences several months ahead of time. Think about those conferences that you might have always wanted to go to but couldn't, and apply at the same time that you know you're applying for this award, so that if you get the award, you've also got some conferences within the UK and other European countries, which would give you a chance to disseminate your research at an even broader level and connect with colleagues elsewhere. I managed to go to Barcelona and do a conference, and to Belfast to do a conference. So I would say it's a lot to think about, but the more you can do ahead of time, I think before you get to the country, the better it is for you, because you'll have plans and things out, and that gives you some time to really connect with where you are and get to know the people, the institutions, the sites that visitors always want to go see, and do that in a more stress-free kind of situation, not to feel so rushed about things. So I was there for 6 months. And that goes pretty fast. So you want to try to plan out, I think, as much as you can ahead of time.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Pamela. This was wonderful. You hit on so many important points, very inspiring, and I really appreciate your time and dedication to the Fulbright US Scholar Program, and also the wonderful things you did as cultural ambassador. So that's amazing. Thank you. So, just to continue with the how do you understand the awards, that there are all these great opportunities in the UK, but you want to just scroll through our catalog of awards, and I'm going to show you also the live catalog of awards on our website. But basically, here's just a screenshot of what you want to look for, and just to highlight here, Fulbright University of Manchester Distinguished Chair in Humanities Award. And as you notice here, there are four tabs: award details, award requirements, stipend and benefits, and country and area overview. So the website that is dedicated to the awards catalog is here, awards.cis.org, and I'm going to just show you briefly on our website where to look for these opportunities, because this is just 1 second. So here's our website, and if you can confirm that you can see the catalog, I would appreciate it. Basically, like we said, it's awards.cis.org, and it is here you would search for the country. So you would go for United Kingdom all the way down here, and you search for these awards, wonderful awards that we have. There are somewhere 29 awards found for UK. So you want to look for, you know, for example, the Fulbright Cybersecurity Award. Just want to see that everyone can see my screen. Can you just confirm that you can see my screen? I want to make sure you can see it. Yes, okay, great, thank you. So basically, let's look at the Fulbright Cybersecurity Award, for example, as one of the awards that is one of the few awards in the UK that gives you the option to affiliate with any institution in any appropriate higher education institution in the UK. So first thing, you want to look for the award details, look at the grant activity, what they're looking for, the profile of the applicant, and what kind of activities. So this is research only, and the grant length, you need to match your project according to the requirements of the time here in the grant length. So 3 months to 6 months. Basically, it could be 4 months, it could be 5 months, but make sure it's within these parameters. And then further, more details are given, like when should you start your project and where is the location. So as you notice, most of the awards in the UK are partnership awards, are already set with a university or an institution. But this one is open to affiliate with any, make sure it's an accredited institution within the UK. And flex option is not offered for this one, so you want to pay close attention to the discipline types, like the sub-disciplines, and then if there are any special features. Going up at the award requirements, the letter of invitation is required, so make sure you reach out to the hosts and, like Pamela suggested, maybe like the head or the dean of the department, and then just send them your resume, your summarized project idea, and see what their interest is. So for the time being, given the current situation, you can definitely reach out to the universities, because with, as in the U.S., most of these institutions and universities are working online, so I'm sure somebody will get back to you. But, you know, if you don't receive the letter of invitation, you can, you know, postpone that for later. But definitely just make the initial contact with the host, potential host in the UK. Additional information about applicant profile can be found here, and we do have here the email address for the Fulbright Commission in the UK, where Rebecca works at, and they manage the program on the ground, and they sometimes can help facilitate with these contacts. More information about, you know, stipends and benefits, because that's one of the questions we get. So every award would have different stipends. Make sure you look for those, and the information can be found here in dollars as of January 2020, for example. And then if there are any special awards benefits, or usually they would post here like some resources or information, additional information. The last tab is the information about the UK, the country, and in general, like how many awards or Fulbright grants are awarded every year. Here you will see the application deadline. As we mentioned earlier, we are recruiting now for application cycle 21-22, and the deadline for this application is September 15, 2020. It's, like I mentioned, it's just research. The degree, PhD, is not required for this particular award. They welcome applicants from early career up to like more senior level of scholars, and number of grants up to two. And here, for every award, we have a program staff dedicated that would work with applicants. If they have any questions, feel free to reach out to me or call me or send me an email here. I'm at your disposal to answer any questions you have. And then here is a very important step to begin your application process. This will take you to another part of our website where you can basically start your online application. It's not a lot of information. You just put your name, an email address, and a password, login information, a password, and then you are part of our network, basically, and then we will reach out to you for additional information, resources, whenever we have a webinar upcoming, etc. So even if you're considering that you might start the application later on, I would recommend you start it now, and then you're part of our network, you're part of our communication that we contact applicants on a weekly basis. Additional information can be found here, the project statement requirements. Like Pamela mentioned, we do have sample project statements. Make sure you look for those. And then requirements for your resume, for recommendation letters. This year, we only require two letters of recommendation. So this is a new thing this year. So you just need two letters of recommendations in order for your application to be eligible. And then for a portfolio is required for applicants who are interested in applying in the arts or any of these disciplines here. So more details, like there's a checklist like from A to Z on how to develop these contacts abroad and what it is to what it takes to make a strong application. We do have another important feature on our website, which is the Fulbright Scholar Directory. Here is a list of alumni, and you can filter them by the discipline or just the country, and you will just have this list here available and reach out to these alumni, and they will be happy to help you with any feedback or suggestions or tips or just share their experience, or maybe even if they have time to read your project statement. So these are just some of the resources. So going back to our presentation now, basically I just went through the application components and we discussed that, so no need to go through that again, but keep in mind that there is this online application form. It's pretty user-friendly, and once you started, you're part of our network. We will communicate with you directly through the application. What is the project statement? It is like the most critical part of your application where you would explain why Fulbright, why you, why this country, and you would need to explain how adaptable you are to living abroad. So if you have experience in living abroad or in working with people from other cultures, you should highlight that in your application. So it is 3 to 5 pages long, and it is important that you explain here what you plan to do with whether it's teaching, research, and your methods. Affiliations and invitations, like I mentioned, can be found under the award page on the first page under location. So make sure if you don't know anyone, then you would just search for the international office within your campus. Maybe you are hosting a scholar from this country and from the UK or from this institution, or maybe you have like some these study abroad relationship with that university, so you want to see what's going on and just get some more information about this country, and then look for the Fulbright Scholar Directory that I showed you earlier. when the letter of invitation is required, just keep in mind it's not like a contract, because these institutions sometimes issue multiple letters of invitations to different applicants. So make sure that yours stand out. You need to be proactive about it. You just need to send the inviting institution like some of the benefits they will have from your project, from your teaching or research, and make sure they include that in your letter. So it should come from a person you will be collaborating with. The person should have the authority to invite you, because if selected, they will need to share like some office space or like a computer or internet connection, and it should be on their institution letterhead. And they can just scan it and email it to you. So the portfolio only for applicants in the creative or performing arts, they will submit basically a sample of their work. So whether it's for like creative writing or whether it's architects, etc., we do provide like details on the guidelines, specific guidelines on images, pictures, and graphics. So make sure you follow those. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out. Here's the application cycle timeline. Basically, we opened the application cycle for 2021-2022. The deadline is September 15. After the deadline, we will conduct a technical review of your application to make sure you're not missing a component, like a letter of invitation when it's required, or a letter of recommendation, or other components. After your application is complete and is eligible for further review, go back to the technical review. If you're missing a component, we will reach out to you and ask that you provide us with those missing documents. So we'll give you like a week or two to get back to us. So we'll give you basically another chance to complete your application. From October to November, there is the first review process, which is US peer review, and it is done by usually the Fulbright alumni. And there are these discipline review committees that they will review the application. And if you pass this first stage, then your application is moved further, is processed further to the UK. So we will notify you somewhere like by beginning of December of this year whether you've passed this first stage or not. Those that pass the first stage, then the applications are processed further to the UK Fulbright Commission, and now Rebecca has a busy time reviewing all these applications, and they also establish their panels, and this will take sometimes between January through April. Some of the partnership awards, they will sometimes schedule Skype interviews. It depends. It's not always set. But you will be notified accordingly. So by April, so by now, for example, applicants who applied last year for 2021, they all know whether they're selected or not. And then from May onwards, then you will be preparing for your travel in the UK. So depending on when your program starts. The last thing that I really recommend is to join my Fulbright is CIS2.org. Again, this is our network where you would be part of it and you would express your interest in the UK and the discipline, and then we will communicate with you directly. You can always email us at europeeurasia@iae.org with any questions. We make sure to get back to you within 24 hours or 48 hours from the time we receive your inquiry. And like I showed you the catalog of awards, it has a lot of information there. I recommend you refer your colleagues. If you have other candidates who are eligible and who are qualified, please, please refer them, and because this is a great opportunity as well. You can follow us on social media, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn if you are interested to learn more about what Fulbright just shared, what is their experience in the Fulbright program. Now, I would like to check the questions that we have. And again, thank you so much for your attention and in the Fulbright US Scholar Program to the UK. Rebecca and Pamela, I still have you on the line. Thank you also for sharing your insight and information. So let's see. Pamela, if we still have you on the line, there's a question for you. Did you have clear outcomes for your research, and what's an IRB?
Oh, okay. If you don't know what an IRB is, you probably don't need to worry about it, but the Institutional Review Board is there to make sure that whatever you're doing research-wise is ethical, particularly if you're working with human beings. So if you're a chemist and maybe you're working with some not with human beings, then you might not have to worry about it in that sense. But because my project involved working with youth age 12 through 18, there are protections that my university makes me put in place to make sure that whatever I'm doing is something they feel is ethical and humane. So that's a worldwide thing. Many people call them different things. I think University of Edinburgh called it their ethics board. We call it the Institutional Review Board here in the United States. So whenever you're thinking about doing any sort of research and you want to publish on it, then usually you have to submit an IRB application. And most colleges and universities have those online, or they have an IRB officer that you can talk with.
Thank you so much, Pamela. So I have a question for Rebecca. Rebecca, if I have you on the line, because I know it's getting late in the UK now. It's past 7 p.m. So are independent scholars with a senior level academic background in the humanities eligible for distinguished chairs?
That's a good question. I would check the specific catalog page for each distinguished chair, but typically it's based on, as you say, your background. So if you have had that distinction in your career, but you are now independent, that shouldn't be an issue, but I would double check what it specifically says in the catalog page for each distinguished chair award.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. So we have a question about the term seminar in the UK. Rebecca, maybe you can help us. Does the term a seminar mean a semester-long course the way it does at a US university? I think the term seminar might mean something different in UK.
That's a great question. So broadly speaking, the word seminar in the UK refers to a type of class that is held in a small discussion group. But as Pamela will have some experience with, universities are, at least especially undergraduate level teaching, is administered slightly differently in the UK. And so a seminar might look more like a typical US class and that would be taught by one professor, whereas in many disciplines in undergraduate education in the UK, a class is taught by multiple professors in a very different setup. That said, in the context of our awards where they particularly focus on a seminar, it is almost exclusively very much like a US seminar in that it is a sort of semester or term length project. And again, for those awards where there is specific requirement to design and implement a seminar, those details are usually quite specific and are detailed on the catalogue. So if I think for an example like the award at Pembroke College at Oxford University, which is based around delivering a seminar, that has very specific dates that are outlined in the award description.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. And another question about eligibility. So one applicant, he was born in the UK, but he's a US citizen and has lived and worked in the US for 30 years. Is he eligible?
If you have US citizenship, you are eligible. So it doesn't matter where you're, if you have other dual citizenship or you're born in another country, if you are a US citizen, you are eligible.
Thank you. As long as they reside in the U.S., right? So they,
that's right.
Right. So perfect. Thank you so much. Are family members allowed to work in the U.K. during the Fulbright period? May family members draw salary from the U.S. without it being taxed by the U.K.?
So I can't necessarily speak to tax questions, but in terms of working, when you come to the UK as a US scholar, the Fulbright Commission will be your visa sponsor, and we sponsor you to be a Tier 5 migrant to the UK. And as a Tier 5 migrant, your sponsorship extends to any dependents. And so any dependents, whether that's a spouse or your children, will travel on Tier 5 dependent visas. This will allow limited work. I mean, again, all sort of visa information happens later in the process, but Tier 5 dependents can work in certain circumstances, and also Tier 5 dependent children can enroll in schools. If you want to look more specifically at how dependents be treated, that's what I would look up. So UKVI is the UK visa in immigration, and if you search for UKVI Tier 5 migrant, you'll be able to get more information about how that works.
Can I add something there about the tax piece?
Yes,
so this is Pam again, sorry. So because it recommended on the website, it said something like this is intended not to, you know, replace your salary or whatever. This is a stipend to help you in your Fulbright experience. So I knew that I was not renting my place here, so I had to continue to pay my rent. So what I wound up doing, and this is something you should think about if you're coming from an institution, from a college or a university, is find out what the specs are for research leave at your university. So a Fulbright is a very distinguished thing. So at my university, we don't really have sabbatical, quote unquote, but when I came to them and said, I got this Fulbright, they said, oh, okay. And I said, I'd like to take a research leave. And they gave me the option of either having my full pay or half pay. And what I would say is just to be aware that if you do something like that, let's say if you get half pay or full pay, you're obviously going to continue to be taxed on your pay from your institution here at home. But you will not have any taxes come out from the pay you get from Fulbright. And depending upon what that level is, if it's a distinguished chair, that could be quite a bit of money. And so when you come back to the States to do your taxes, you're going to have to pay taxes on all of that. So just be aware of that, I would say, you know, and you might even, since it says there what the award is for the compensation, you might want to talk to a tax person about how to balance that so that you're not paying a whole lot of tax when you get back.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Pamela. This is very helpful. So we have an applicant who is interested in applying in the same award, similar award, Pamela, so he would like to connect with you. So I'm going to share your contacts if that's okay with you.
That's fine.
Yeah, so, and you can do the same, like I showed you the Fulbright Scholar directory. You can just look up applicants in your discipline who went to the UK or to this partnership award, because you can filter them any way you want, and then just reach out to them, because Fulbrighters are amazing people. They help each other out, so feel free to connect with them. We have another question about the how many applications we receive, like statistics. So unfortunately, we cannot share the number of applications we receive, but definitely just want to highlight that UK is one of the largest countries that offers so many diverse opportunities. They offer about 29 awards, and in total they grant somewhere from 30 to 31 grants a year, and it is really a great opportunity. You want to consider all the requirements and that we just discussed, the application components, to make yourself as a competitive applicant. Just focus on that. So someone also commented that we send about 800 grantees, Fulbrighters a year abroad. So, but to the UK, out of that 800 to the UK, we send about 30 to 31 a year. So just to kind of have a better a sense of what's the number in the UK. The other question that we have, thank you so much for all these great questions. We really appreciate your enthusiasm and interest in the Fulbright program, as it is like very a great program. It offers you this great opportunity to connect with scholars and colleagues in the UK. And for the Cybersecurity Award, we have a special question about how to create a relationship with the host university, because this is not a partnership award, like we mentioned. You basically want to research all these institutions in the UK that work on cybersecurity and that are accredited institutions of higher higher education that do research in cybersecurity, and then you just want to see as a professional, as an expert in the field, probably you would know better, and then reach out to a couple of them and see whoever responds like with more enthusiastically about hosting you, and then just try to establish connections with them. Rebecca, if you want to add something else to this from your experience with this particular award, yeah, feel free to say something if you want to share with us.
Sure. I'd also suggest that if you reach out and perhaps you reach out to an institution that hasn't previously hosted a Fulbright scholar because they aren't one of our university partners that that regularly offers an award, please do feel free to reach out to me. I believe the Fulbright program's email address was included in one of those slides, which is Fulbright and then programs, spelled the British way, P-R-O-G-R-A-M-M-E-S. At fulbright.org.uk. I'll also share my email address at the end, my personal email. But I'd be very happy to answer any questions that potential hosts have about the program in this instance, because while with the partner awards, they obviously are very experienced with hosting our scholars, we're more than happy to walk other institutions through the process and what it would mean to host a scholar if they have any questions about it.
Great, thank you. We have a great question now about, again, eligibility or preference that will be given to applicants who have not already spent a significant amount of time in the UK. So this is referring to like the recent time spent in the UK. And we have a special question about this applicant who studied abroad like as an undergrad student at a UK university like 20 years ago. So this applicant would still be eligible and qualified to apply, and the preference that is given to applicants who have not recently spent. So this is not recent, obviously. This was 20 years ago, right, Rebecca?
Absolutely, yeah. So we do take into account things like extensive experience in the country, but that certainly wouldn't count something like a study abroad experience as extensive experience in the country. In those instances, we're more mindful of something like perhaps if you had worked at a UK university recently or conducted a long project at a UK university, this might not be the best opportunity for you. But we also weigh up those things in a sort of holistic way, looking at your whole application. But certainly for that specific question about a study abroad experience, we wouldn't count that against an applicant.
Thank you so much, Rebecca. This is very helpful. Some of the fields that are not specifically represented, some disciplines, how can one choose what is the best option, like best award to apply to? Again, pay close attention. Some partnership awards, they offer all discipline award with this particular university, and you want to research and see if that university offers your discipline, right, Rebecca? So this is like the best approach that I would recommend.
Absolutely. So I'd be looking at two things. There's the sort of two approaches. There's the things that rule them out, and then the opportunities where they have a specific focus. So broadly speaking, you want to be looking at the catalogue and making sure you've seen, is it discipline specific? Is it all disciplines? Is it certain disciplines? Because there are institutions, for example, like Queen Mary University of London, where it is a number of disciplines, but it isn't everything. So that can help you rule out, okay, perhaps I'm not eligible for this. But the awards descriptions also do give some guidelines about areas of focus that might be particularly strong at a university. But once you have your list of ones where you are able to apply because it hasn't ruled out, for example, your discipline, I would be encouraging people to go to those institutional websites, look at the kind of staff that are in your area, look at the research activity or the teaching, if that's relevant, and then it would be sort of make sure you know in principle that you're eligible and then do that research to figure out, okay, does Loughborough have a focus in my medical field that's really going to work for me? It's going to be a sort of dual looking both at the catalogue and our website, but then going to those institutional websites and learning more about their focuses. But I would just say do pay attention to those sections in the catalogue where they break down the disciplines slightly more specifically.
Thank you, Rebecca. And we're going to take one more final question. And for all the other questions that we were not able to get to, I'm going to respond to you via email. But basically, one question about eligibility. Are people who had a Fulbright grant in 18-19 cycle eligible to apply this cycle? The answer is no, because you have to wait 2 years from the last time you completed your grant, which for you in this case it was 2019, and then since the application deadline is this year, September 15, 2020, so you just need to wait 2 years from the time you completed to the time you apply.
That question from Pam.
No,
sorry.
Uh-uh.
I would love to come back though.
Yeah, this is like for Pamela, the same. She can't apply. She has to wait one more year. I really would like to thank you all. Thank you, Rebecca and Pamela, for your time and dedication to the Fulbright program and for joining us today in this webinar to highlight opportunities in the UK. And I would like to thank also participants with all the great questions and enthusiasm. And feel free to reach out again, and we'll be happy to answer all your questions and help you to connect with institutions in the UK. And please stay safe. And I'm looking forward to hearing from you again. I wish you all the best, and stay safe and take care of each other. All the best to you. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.